Hello out there, Foxes fans, and welcome back to another edition of the U.S. Foxes podcast, coming to you live, as always, from various time zones around the United States of America. I, as always, am your host, Matt Foulkes. Joined today, this one, guys, is extra special. We told you a little bit about it in the last pod, told you that we'd have the man at the match, our man at the match, Ollie, would be joining us, and sure enough, we got him here today. I'm joined, as normal, though, by Chris, my wonderful co-host.
Matt, how many years has this been since we've done it in person?
Yeah, I think three years.
3 years. I was saying it feels like yesterday we were doing this on a tiny little table in an apartment downstairs. Yep. And now we're now back.
We moved up.
You've got up a level, but the two dogs, beautiful. It's nice to see them again, and it's nice to see you in person, buddy. But as you said, he's here.
I know. He's here.
He's here.
Without further ado, the man who we've only gotten to hear little snippets from. You know, you've never really gotten the true.
Well, sometimes you get him on loop when one of us forgets to press the stop button.
That's true. I try to edit that out. But anyway, let's get to it. Mr. Ollie McLean.
Good evening.
How are you, my boy?
I am buzzing to be here. It's about time, I'm on it.
I know.
I was going to say it is. It's about time.
It's been, I think, one of the best things that we've added in the pod over the last few years was getting your game day experience, telling us about the match days, you know.
When I remember, anyway.
When you remember, yes. And when I remember, honestly, you've sent them to me before and I forgot to even use them. So I've been just as guilty. But yeah, dude, it's been a very popular thing, and it's awesome to get to do this in person. Finally.
It's a pleasure to be on it as well. Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah,
it's
like you might be wondering why he's here right now. What makes this so special? For those of you who don't know, Ollie goes to every single match, home and away. That's why he's our correspondent. And this just so happens to be an international break right in the middle of the club being literally on fire in about 10 different ways. So what a perfect time to have him.
I was going to say, Ollie, I don't know if you were forecasting this, but kudos if you were, mate. I'll have the lottery numbers next, please, as well, because... Yeah, I mean, as KP's on fire, Ollie's like, I'm just going to go plane and head to San Diego. See you guys in a bit. So, yeah, good job, mate.
Yeah, take me to the dreamland while they can sort their own issues out. I'll go and have some time in paradise.
What give people your initial thoughts of San Diego? What you've thought of the city?
If you get the chance, get over here. It's just phenomenal. I love this place, and whenever I get the chance next, I'll be back, hopefully for longer as well.
Hell yeah. We got to take him to his first Bluefoot experience, went for 80s night, which was a hell of a good time, and then went on Saturday to watch Brazil-England there so he could actually get a game day experience at the Foot.
Yeah, unfortunately, Southgate's men couldn't pull through, but that wasn't the main thing for me. It's being at that infamous bar and... Yeah, just looking at everything. It was, that big thing for me. That was going to the Bluefoot, and I can't wait to be there for a proper city game.
It was cool too. The owner was actually there. You never see her around, and it was cool because I was like, you got to meet this kid. He flew all the way from England. He's been dreaming about coming to your bar for years, and now he's 21 and he's able to get over here. And she couldn't believe it, so it was really cool to introduce her to him.
I know, it's awesome. You got to meet Rodney as well, which is in itself, what a lad. Top shout out to Rodney. I'm glad you got to see it in all its glory. I would say the Bluefoot definitely looks different at 12 p.m. than it does at 5 a.m. But yeah, maybe next time when you come to a Sunday game, 6 a.m. on a Sunday, that's when like you'll see the real Bluefoot and it's like all its glory.
Yeah, we do the countdown because you can't serve alcohol until 6. So there's a countdown until we can.
Although I did find out, thanks to Rod and St. Paddy's Day, that if you order a Guinness, he'll start pouring them at about 5:58, let them settle, and then by 6, he'll top it off for you. So there's a Bluefoot hack in itself. It's like if you want your first beer at 6 on the dot, order a Guinness because you're guaranteed to get it at 6. But yeah, no, top stuff.
Good to finally have him there. Just felt right, man. And you know, the Lesta stickers up in the bathroom. Yeah. I mean, everywhere you look, there's Lesta in that bar.
It was, yeah. It just felt like walking into my own pub in Weston or the town center. Yeah.
Hell yeah. We also got to take him to his first hockey game. Chris and I took him to the San Diego Gulls. What'd you think of the ice hockey?
I loved it a lot more than I thought I would. I didn't think I'd be a big fan, but I can see myself going to more games back home, and it was a good experience.
It was that we almost got to see a fight. There it almost broke out. So I was bummed he didn't get to see a scrap.
The name still gets me in San Diego. What the ghouls, aren't they? I think it is. Yeah, San Diego ghouls. Sort of weird. It's you know what, for the price and what it is, it's a fun little Friday, and yeah, I may have had one too many beers Friday afternoon watching March Madness, but I kind of remember a little bit of it. But hey, it was nice to take it to your first hockey game, and I'm sure I'm guessing on what you said, it was a good game because I can't remember.
Yeah, it was quite a drinking night. We met up at the brewery, so that was great. Also got to take him to a San Diego Wave match last night. 30,000 plus sellout new Snapdragon Stadium. What'd you think of that?
Yeah, first 20 minutes, well, maybe even 30 minutes, I thought this is the quality of this football is proper. But then it sort of died off a bit, and I thought, well, first half, I must admit, I was like, this is a bit of a better sort of level than back home. But then second half, after 50 minutes or so, you're just like, this is kind of a bit the same.
Yeah.
But the atmosphere is so different. Getting 32,000, I think it was, wasn't it? For that sort of game is...
Yeah, it was a sold out KP came to watch him. What did you think of the fireworks during the national anthem? I still ten years in, I still can't get over it. It's such a dichotomy, isn't it? Like, you've got the seriousness of a national anthem, and then all of a sudden, halfway through, every corner of the stadium is just lit up by ginormous fireworks out of everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, you gave me the little heads up before the game, but I wasn't expecting that from all the corners. But I said to Matt and Ali before the game that I love how patriotic you are over here. Every chance you get, you'll play the national anthem with fireworks, whereas back home, I'll hear it once every 6 months.
The FA Cup final. Isn't it about the FA Cup final? Is like the only time in the season where you get the national anthem.
Anytime England playing, that's about it. Yeah. You don't hear it very often at all.
Snapdragon itself is so different to the KP.
Oh, big time, yeah.
Because it open air. Well, obviously it's open air because it's San Diego, but you've got all of that local... You can go get a beer from any brewery you want. You can go get local food. You can do pretty much everything local there, which is such a cool thing to have in a stadium. And I'd love to see more of that in England, but it's completely different to the dark dundrums of the KP and the concrete cinder box everywhere.
Yeah, or the metal cattle lines of Swansea where you've shoved in like a piece of cheese. I totally get that. It's such an open air, you know what I mean? How that stadium was designed to just be like so like open air, and it was gorgeous. But for those of you guys that don't know, Ollie also attends damn near all the women's matches. I mean, especially the ones at home. Yeah.
Well, and most games you'll actually hear Ollie as well, won't you, buddy? Because
Ollie is the drummer for the women. How long have you been doing that?
The business end of last season. I got a text from my brother asking if I'd be up to doing it. I said, if you can get the drum there, I'd be more than happy to. And that was the first game they won in a few games. So I just said that, you know, if we do win, I'll do it for the rest of the season. And they ended up staying up. And I just thought, fuck it, I'll carry on doing it.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I missed you today.
Yeah.
I
said I'd get the blame for it.
Yeah, we get to watch a lesser match with Ollie this morning when watch the women. Oh, that was a disappointing one.
It was.
Brighton Hove Albion and their ugly ass green and black kits.
It's awful, isn't it?
God, that's a shit. I don't know why. Disappointing performance, but it was good to kind of get the contrast there. I was interested how you felt versus the women's side. Hey, what else about San Diego that we can cover with you?
The fact that it's perfect, maybe.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, I mean, that's not a bad way to describe the place. Although saying that, it seems like you have brought the weather with us, because I'm just looking out the window right now, and it is actually raining. So,
two days on the trot. I can't believe it. What have I done?
Yeah.
We've had an awful winter. Absolutely awful. There's an event called, I think it's called El Nino, isn't it, Matt? Which is like it notorious for bringing rain to California, and we've had, crazy amount. We had a hurricane late last year, which turned out to be the biggest dud ever. Like, they told us to stay home, avoid leaving the house, and
literally
and wow. It didn't even No one. It didn't rain.
No, yeah, it didn't rain. It blew some trash can lids off around town, so I enjoyed taking photos of those.
But then 2 months later, they told us it was just going to be 24 hours of rain, and it got stalled. And next thing you know, the whole of this street's flooded.
Yeah, our entire street flooded. The tide came in at the perfect time. It fucked up our pier. That's why you can't take you out on the pier, the world famous OB pier. Literally, the waves were so high that it knocked an entire pillar off. So now that has to be condemned and rebuilt. They're talking about doing it. So lovely, lovely times. I think it's good though. We should dive into this season with the man. I'm just so curious to share, you know, the kind of experience with the listeners that, you know, you go through every day, your normal match day. You know, I think, I don't know if we can just throw some questions at him.
I think, no, so let's start right at the beginning then. So what was your first ever Leicester game? And was that the one that got you hooked, or was there a moment later on that you kind of like, you know what, I'm a Fox, I'm going to follow this team through thick and thin, ups and downs? So, what was it?
First ever game was Scunthorpe at home.
Oh, classic.
I think the season we won League One. Yeah, just ever since then, I can't remember. I can't remember if it was 1-0 or 1-1. But yeah, we won the league there, and just ever since then, I've just thought this is the one for me. This is my life now, and I've never really looked back.
You come from. I mean, it's in your blood, frankly.
For sure.
Your dad got you into the games.
It's the main man that I'm sure is watching right now from home. Shout out to you for making me as in love as I am, and as part of the disease as I am.
So who was the player then first game at Scunthorpe? Like, who was the guy that you were like, you know what, okay, because that team itself would have been what year would that have been?
It would have been, I think it was 2000, I might have been very wrong saying it, I think it was 2009. That's the year that runs off my head as early as I can remember. But as for players, Matty Fryer is probably one of my favourite strikers for the club. He would have been there for that game. Another name that springs to mind is Matt Oakley, who I don't feel like he got the love that he deserved. I really like Matt Oakley.
There's a few players like that.
Yeah.
Especially in 2009.
Yeah.
Yeah, Fryer, everyone's like, score you 40 goals at League One and get to the Championship and score you 5. It was like the dichotomy between like his abilities in the League One and in the Championship were just chalk and cheese. It was absolutely. I'm just pulled up the team. There's some great names on here. You've got everyone from Nobby Solano through Steve Howard, Andy King, obviously,
Bruno
Chris
Berner.
Powell, Bruno Bernard,
Bruno.
DJ Campbell. I mean, that squad in itself could tell some stories.
Chris Wheel in the net.
Yeah. Jack Hobbs as well, centre off. I actually rated him back in the day. I thought he was going to be quite good. He was just big. And I always thought to myself, I was like, Leicester needed centre halves that were big. And
I just
Jack Hobbs
love
was
the fact that you can name like any year in like a 20 fucking, it feels like a 25 year span, and you can just add Andy King in there because the boy was in a bassinet.
It's the ultimate trivia cheat question, isn't it? Like, anytime after like 2008, like, name a Leicester player. All right, Andy King. Okay, I'll just write that down straight away.
I mean, you're in a room with a framed picture of the boy kissing the trophy. So this is an Andy King household, no doubt. Let's get into this season. You've obviously grown up with some pretty nice successes and got to witness those in person.
Yeah, it's not been too bad.
It's you've made some Europe trips, been to Rome, see this team play, going to Plymouth to see this team play. I mean, what else can you add? Rome to Plymouth, baby. So what are your thoughts on the current state of things, given the highs that you've got to witness?
I mean, the highs will absolutely outweigh every single low that I think I'll ever experience with this club. I never thought I'd see us winning a single trophy in my time, let alone a Premier League, an FA Cup, a Community Shield. Seeing us in a semi-final in the European competition, it's incredible to say I've seen that just by the age of 21.
And then to see, you know, unfortunately, the contrast to where we are now.
Yeah. It happens, doesn't it? but truth be told, it's probably been one of my most enjoyable seasons. Maybe not the last few months, but up until January, it was an absolute roller coaster, and it was fantastic to be confident going into a game and go to a game and have a smile on your face, look at all your friends and family smiling, being excited about going to a game and having a bit of optimism about the game.
But as a Leicester fan, isn't there a little bit of you that kind of is like enjoys the down and the pest? Like, I don't know, maybe it's just because like you're only 21, so you've still got your whole life ahead of you to enjoy the sadness that can be Leicester City at times. But I think, and what, I'm 37 now, and it's like there's when the lows are low, it seems often when the lows are low, it's like sometimes you just embrace it a little bit and you're like, okay, it can't get any worse than this. And then this club goes and does something that makes it even worse. And so, yeah, it's it is kind of wild to think about all the stuff that this club has gone through in your short time, in your time as a fan and as well. And it's like, holy crap. Like,
it's nuts.
Just imagine the next 20 years of this club. Like, and where are we going? It's
thing is, we said that, but we could win everything. We could win absolutely nothing. There's just no telling, yeah, is
exactly
that?
This club, you have no idea whether we're going to be Champions League winners in 20 years or in the non-league in 20 years. Like, both of them are legitimate kind of.
Yeah,
if someone said to me we'd be non-league, all right, I kind of can see that path. Or we're going to win the Champions League. Yeah, I can kind of see that path as well. So yeah, God bless Leicester.
That's what we do. Tell me about the beginning of the year. What your, I mean, can contrast it to now, for example, like when you went to the first home game of the season, everybody buzzing with the belief that everyone, you know, thought, you know, new system, new manager. What? Give me an idea for how that was.
Well, obviously the whole HMS Pista League was already going about before the ball was even kicked. Right. And, you know, first game being Coventry at home, it was a game that everyone in the stadium knew that, and in the community just knew that, win this, we're off to a flying start and we get one up on them, them horrible lot. And yeah, the vibe on the day was, it was excellent. Just drinks were flowing and everyone was optimistic and new season.
Yeah,
let's do this.
And I guess the reason I'm curious is because there's been so much made of, you know, the shitty atmosphere at the KP this season. And at the beginning of the season, like, was it kind of the same thing? Was it quiet? What was that like?
Yeah, it's pretty.
So it's been a year-long thing.
Yeah, pretty much. It was rock solid for that Coventry game, but that's obviously a big rivalry, as you can expect. But I can't really think back to many or any home games that the atmosphere has been rocking. There's been a few that we've been losing, and so it's got the lads going and we've got behind them. But from minute one to minute 90, I can't quite put my head around that's. There's been a game of atmosphere that's been rocking like it was first game of the season. Yeah, it is a shame that we've not been able to keep that atmosphere, and we've hugely grown the reputation of having a shit fan base, which is not true, because the away support is truly, it really is good on its good days. I think it's a bit unfair that we get the shit fans category, but people, haters gonna hate, aren't they, really, always?
Oh, I think it goes back to that idea as well of just the misery aspect of being a Leicester fan. And we'll always find something to cotton on to if we have to. And you can read it online and stuff. It's always going to be that, like, it's never going to be good enough. We're going to try and try and try, but it's never, ever, ever going to be good enough. And I'll just say kudos to people like yourself, Ollie, and Union FS and those sorts of fans that are trying to do something. Because without them, there'd be nothing. And so it's funny. We talked about it on the pod earlier this year when we were reading some of the notes from the fan forum and the people in the front row of the cop complaining that the tifos were too big that they couldn't see as the players walked on the pitch, and it was just like, what? Yeah, what's it come to now? In the cop?
Like, what? I don't get. Like, what do people? I don't know. It's so different. I mean, you saw last night we had TIFO for the San Diego Wave. There's a TIFO. So I just don't. Is it this old lot mentality? What do they say? The
Prawn Sandwich Brigade.
Prawn Sandwich Brigade. Yeah. I mean, is it that?
Oh, big time. Yeah. With Leicester, it's it's the ham sandwich brigade that goes around on Twitter, and there's known for it's people that will sit row one every week and moan every week and shout, get it forward, and then when they finally do get it forward, they'll still be moaning that we've lost the ball. So you just can't win with some fans in our fan base, and I know it'll be like that for everyone, but I feel like for us it's a big handful that just live to moan, and it's really shit because they make it to the away games as well, and they'll again sit front row and tell you to move out of the way if you're trying to make some support for the lads.
So you want to get it forward, member of the gang? Then you in Enzo we trust kind of way.
I trust. Yeah, I just hate it because they're shouting, get it forward, and then we get it forward and lose it. Everyone's still moaning. But yeah, there's just no winning sometimes. But yeah, I'm not a get it forward shouter. I don't think I ever will be. The only time I'll be a bit pissy with how we're playing, passing on the back, is when we're a goal down in the 92nd minute pushing for an equaliser.
I think ours at the blue foot is more of when Mads has got the ball and there's five of the opposition pressing on our back four, but instead of lumping it long, he'll still try and pay the pass, aka Hull, and every other game this season, where we naturally put ourselves into the mire by some of the decision making that we do at the back sometimes. And I think, like we've talked about on the pod, I think there's a balance with Enzo Ball where,
yes,
I think it's okay at times to get it, just to lump it up the pitch. If we're going to, because I think we're looking back on this season, we'll see games where we've thrown it away from some of the tactics of trying to play that 5-yard ball out of the box when we could have gone long, or we could have, you know, sometimes I miss the days of Schmeichel when he would just throw it out. Like his distribution was awful, but sometimes he would just.
No, when he threw the ball, he was Peyton Manning out there. It's when he would just try to, you know, hit those chips to the wingers that, you know, Mads is, to his credit, Mads hits those balls.
He does. He's
delivers them like a dime.
So let me ask you this. What is the thing about the championship that's most surprised you this season? Obviously, this is we've been in the Premier League for nearly 10 years. And so the majority of you being a fan has been the Premier League. And so coming down to the championship is kind of relatively new. So what's the one thing that's kind of surprised you or shocked you about it?
Do you know what? Because the last 3 or 4 years, you'd watch the odd game on TV that's on the championship, and you'd think, oh, the quality here is just awful. But I've been really shocked at the quality of some of the football. Not all of it, granted, because you get teams like Rotherham, it's just awful to watch. But yeah, the quality of some of the teams, especially towards the top, that surprised me big time. And some of the support as well, how well some of the teams are still supported being in the championship and down in the leagues as well. But yeah, personally for me, I think I'm preferring the championship at the minute with no VAR. And as soon as that ball hits the back of the net, you look at the linesman, the flag's down, you can go back. I'm just a big fan of not waiting around and having the glory taken away.
Yeah, I was explaining that to some guy. We were talking to some guys at the Blue Foot the other day at some prem. They're like, oh man, we can't wait to have you guys back up. And I'm like, not so fucking sure I want to be back up, because I've been watching y'all, you know, this bullshit fucking hesitation of the VAR. It just, you know, we want to go crazy. Can we go crazy? Now we can go, like, or not. And it's just, I totally get it.
Every single decision seems to take at least 3 minutes now, and that just,
and they still fuck it up. That's my biggest thing. Like, I'm fine, take 3 minutes, but get it right. Yeah.
Well, let him know, let Ollie know in the crowd as well why it's taking 3 minutes to make that decision. I think one of the things that we're fortunate, well, the only fortunate thing I say not being at the games live is the fact that on the NBC feed, for example, they are pretty clear in the commentary box telling you when a VAR check is happening during the game. So the commentators know straight away when there's a VAR check going on, and they'll communicate that out. So as you're watching the game, you can see it's happening. But for you guys in the stands, I don't think there's anything to tell you that anything's going on with VAR. And even if there is a pause, you have no idea why it's a pause, and you just assume, and it's awful like that, I think. they've got to do a better job communicating those things out.
Yeah, all we get is the ref puts his finger to his ear and tells everyone to wait, and then after about a minute, it comes up on the screens that there's a VAR check, not what it's for, and then 30 seconds later, it'll say, oh, potential handball or potential offside. But it's, yeah, you're right, it's ridiculous. And I've noticed as well that they know, watching on TV at home, they know the outcome of the VAR check before they do in the stands.
Yeah.
Which
makes no sense.
It's not right. It really isn't right.
I like what the Australian League did with the, I think they did it.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, when they mic'd up the ref.
They mic'd up the ref, and the ref can explain. And that's a lot of what happens in the NBA. It happens in NHL now. Don't get me started on the referee quality of those fucking leagues. But at least there's at least some sort of accountability where the ref has to turn, you know, to the crowd and literally call out what the what it is and get either booed the fuck, you know, back to his spot or whatever, or he gets cheered like a hero. So.
Yeah, they had it in the Women's World Cup as well, didn't they? The referees in the Women's World Cup kind of communicated to the stadium when checks were going on. But to just go full circle and talk about the difference in refereeing in the championship, like, I still think it's really bad. But at the same time, I've been less annoyed with it than I have been in the Premier League. Like, I remember last year when we had bad decisions, I was seething for days because I'm like, how does the referee and VAR get that wrong, given they have everything available to make that decision? In the Championship, when there's a bad decision, yes, in the moment, you're flabbergasted, you're annoyed, but then you can say, well, the ref's only human and he only has his eyes and he is what he is in that moment. And so that's where the biggest problem I've had is I've really enjoyed the fact that there is no VAR, to your guys' point. That's been a revelation. Being able to celebrate in the moment is such a great thing that I think you've missed being part of the Premier League. But I am aware that I think when we go back up, we are going to go back up and it's not going to have changed. It's still going to be a crapshoot. It's still probably going to statistically favour the teams like United and City and things like that. And it's just like another thing you have to get through as part of being in the Premier League.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I don't know if you guys have realised or noticed or seen it on Instagram or Twitter, but Sky Sports over here have started to do analysis of the recordings of the referee, the VAR and the assistants, where they've got a decision. Well, they've made the decision and then 2 days later they've posted on social media. I'd love to see them do that with every single decision they make, because they only do it with the ones they make.
That started with, was it the Tottenham game?
Correct, Chelsea.
Yeah, Chelsea-Tottenham, where it kind of was such a grievous decision that they were like, we're going to post the audio and throw you under the bus, guys. Sorry about that. But
yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan, but I'm going to make the most of that these last, eight games with no VAR. Well, who knows? It might not be what I'm going up after all. Who knows?
Yeah. Okay. Favorite away ground this season?
Oh, I'm probably going to say Huddersfield. I really like Huddersfield's ground.
Is that still called the John Smith?
Yeah.
Oh, and then
John Smith is still printed everywhere around the stadium. But I just think it's a really unique ground with the blue sort of arches and not joint. I just think it's a really, really unique ground. That'd probably be my favorite.
I love that John Smith stuff because when we were at Swansea, you know, it's not the Liberty anymore. Now it's Swansea.com Arena. It's just
they've got so lazy naming stadiums now. It's ridiculous.
So if for our American listeners, go on YouTube and type in John Smith commercial, and you'll see the one straight away that we're talking about, where it's basically a group of lads. It looks like it's a Sunday morning having a kick around and everyone's doing a bit of fancy skill. And then it gets given to one guy and he just hoofs it over the fence into someone's back garden and gives it the old avit. And that's kind of where the John Smith kind of avit association with football has come from. But yeah, I've been to, that's a really nice stadium, the Huddersfield one. It used to, back in the day, it was like that one and the Reebok at Bolton were like next generation type stadiums because they had, like, to your point, the curved roof and they had the doming stuff. And it was like before the days of, ironically, the KP and the Matchbox stadiums that we now have in the UK.
You're exactly right. There's so many that are similar. I mean, speaking of Swansea and the KP. Okay, that's the favorite ground. Tell me about the fan base. Worst fan base, okay?
Ooh, worst,
we'll start with that.
Worst home fans this season. There's been a few stinkers. Rotherham were really poor.
Well, I can't blame them.
Yeah, neither can I really. Another one. Ooh. Yeah, there's a few very close seconds, but I think the winner is Stoke, other than Rotherham, because Stoke, I think they had about 27 fans there altogether. It was very, very poor. I know we won 5-0, and they didn't have much to sing about at all, but even when it was 0-0, they were just, it was awful. But yeah, there's been a fair few home atmospheres that have been really shocking this season.
It's interesting you mentioned Stoke. When you were in the away end for that, we talked about it on the podcast a little bit, how that game was almost a redemption for us from the year when we got relegated. Like, did you feel that in the away end? Did it feel like everybody was like kind of sighing out the demons?
For sure. Yeah. There was something different in there. Maybe it was starting the whole 10 more years, Jamie Vardy song or the relegation revenge, but it was, yes, you're right. Something definitely felt different. Regardless of it being a 5-0 thumping, that was one of the better away days this season. Yeah.
Okay. Then the flip side of that. Tell me about fans that, you know, whether you liked them or not, you got to give respect to them. Who's been some loud ones?
I mean, the obvious ones, Leeds. They were obviously coming one. Well, no, tell a lie. Leeds weren't good. They were good for 9 minutes
it sounded like on the TV.
It was, yeah, that, but I was shocked because every time I've been to Leeds, their atmosphere has been amazing. But for when we, no, even from kickoff, really, after they sang Marching On Together to about the 80th minute, their atmosphere was poor. All you could hear was us. And so I think best home fans this season is, it makes me sick to say the name, but I think it's got to be Coventry. Their cup final, obviously they won the cup final, so they were loud, but there's not been many good home atmospheres. Middlesbrough had a decent singing section, but it weren't that loud. Hull, give credit to the Hull fans there. I think there was a near enough sellout, and both ends to the right side and the left side of the away fans, they were a good set of home fans, I must admit. Ipswich get a lot of love for their support, but they weren't great. But yeah, I'm gonna have to give it to Coventry, with as much as it pains me to say.
Yeah,
that Ipswich game was really interesting because it was Boxing Day, wasn't it? And it was a 8 PM kickoff in the UK. Firstly, like, you now know, we joked on the podcast, but everything is 3 hours to Ipswich down the A47 or however you get there.
Yeah.
We had a great afternoon in the Blue Fort. It was just a shame that the double doink finally hit us for that game. But that was a game that I still look back on, and I'm frustrated with the fact that we didn't go and kind of clinically finish that game. Both that game and the Leeds game this season have been games where I felt like we had the opportunity to really put a foot to the pedal and be decisive and clinical, and we just didn't do it. And do you get that sense in the fan base when you're in the away end sometimes that it does feel like we need to push, and at times we kind of sit back a little bit? Or
without a doubt, yeah. And I think everyone knows it, that's the reason we're not crowned champions right now, that we've not taken enough chances, and we've blown leads. Yeah, like you've said at Ipswich, that it seemed like we just sat back for 60 odd minutes, and it was the same with Sheffield Wednesday. But that's when it really started. That was our first draw, and we got the goal fairly early with Fatawa, and then we just seemed to sit back and let them hit us. We had a couple of chances that we didn't take, but then after them chances again, we had 15 minutes of sitting back, and it's been the story of our season, really, just going a goal up, not building on that goal, which was why I thought Stoke was a turning point in the season, because we got that goal, then we got another one, we just kept on going, and we looked relentless, which was brilliant, and then we just didn't seem to do it again for the season, which is just a big shame.
Yeah, we've noticed throughout the year, I think one of the big things that struck us has been, going back to like the old NBA analogy for our American friends, like as the season gets tighter and tighter, often the bench gets smaller and smaller in NBA teams, and you're looking at a rotation of two or three at that point. And it feels like that's the same with us. It feels like Enzo started the season willing to rotate and willing to play 15 or 16 players. Yep. And at the moment now, it feels like we're scared. We have a core 11 plus one or two, should one of those 11 not be available. And that I think, has been the most frustrating thing for me and Matt watching the games. And I think we've seen that as well from other friends we've spoke to. Like, just make a sub. Like, sometimes I think we do struggle because we don't make a change quick enough. And then we get players out there who, to be honest, end up having really disappointing games. And you look back and you're like, why did we not do that? And I think talking currently, the Chelsea game was one of those, for example, where I thought half the team were brilliant, but I also thought the other half of the team, first 45 minutes, were bloody awful. Yeah. It's like, what are we doing here, Enzo? Make a change, mate. Like, why? Or make some sort of tactical change that will address the problems that we were seeing. Like, in that Chelsea game, they had a great idea. It was like, okay, we're going to play an inverted fullback. All right, no problem. But as soon as we get the ball, we're going to try and push down those empty spaces that you've created because you've been playing inverted fullbacks. So, yeah, the frustration about sometimes not making a sub has been a real kind of thing for us, hasn't it, this year?
100%. And I think that's a perfect transition because, you know, we've kind of caught up through the season now. Let's talk about that Chelsea match more, man. I want to hear, you know, about your trip to London, all of it. What was the last time you were at Chelsea compared to, you know, when we were then?
I mean, last time I was at Chelsea, I missed about 25 minutes of the game due to being too drunk and falling asleep in the stands. But
what? Yeah. You fell asleep in the stands.
Yeah. There's a video. I took a video of myself and I'm falling over outside the ground, and it just came from there. Just getting London early, drinking, more drinking on an empty stomach. You know what that's like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Watched the first half. I think we went 1-0 down to Raheem Sterling, and I at the half time I just said, "Oh, you know what? I feel really drunk. I'm going to put my head down. Fuck it, why not?" I ended up missing, until the 65th minute, I think it was. Maybe 70.
You were fast asleep in your seat?
Yeah.
Oh, so everyone was standing around you and you just decided to sit down and have a bit of a kip?
Yeah, that was right, yeah. Yeah.
Fair play to your mates for not fucking with you, because I absolutely would have been fucking with
you. I would have as well. I don't know why. Yeah, they've missed a big opportunity there, but I appreciate them for not doing it. But yeah, this time around, it's always a good day out in London. Got there fairly early again, but the tubes were a nightmare, so we couldn't get as many drinks in, which was unfortunate. But yeah, still, it's a good day out in London, kind of ruined by the football, but I shouldn't have let it be that case, because I was very strong in the mentality of I've come in here not expecting anything. It was for me, it was like, if we win, we've knocked a big team out of the FA Cup and we're going to Wembley again. Whereas it was, if we lose, we'll just focus on the league and what we need to focus on, really. But it's the manner we lose in for me, that we got two goals down at half time and it just changes big time. And we bring it around to 2-2 and we look like Chelsea don't want it. We want it. We're all saying it. We're going to do this. We will do this. And then, just even at 10 men, we were holding our own, I thought. And ended up losing 4-2. I think that's a bit unfair, considering how we played.
Well, I'm not surprised at the 4-2 part at all. I mean, honestly, the only thing that surprised me, it wasn't more than that, because after they scored, you know, that third, you could just literally see everybody.
Yeah,
just,
they did just
the
give
deflation
up
from the players, from the fans, from Enzo. Like, everybody was just like, okay, fuck it. And so I'm not surprised at all.
I was with you though, Ollie. I think I went into that game, and I think we all did it. Yeah, all of us San Diego Foxes went into that game saying, all right, it is what it is. It's just a quarterfinal against Chelsea. And to be honest, like you said, after the first 20 minutes, 2-0 down, you're like, okay, this is it. But then, to your point, we started to press, and I think the own goal, which I think Matt can describe to you in a minute, how bloody crazy that was on TV, because we didn't even see half of it. And then the second to equalize, and then you're right, all of a sudden we're like, okay, we're in this. We're dancing around the blue foot, jumping up and down, beers going everywhere. Everyone's like, okay, we're going to win this game. And then it felt like, okay, the sending off was a huge thing, But then it was, again, a tactical decision to kind of sit back almost. And it was like, oh, God, okay. If you sit back against this Chelsea team, I think the quality is eventually going to get you. And I think it did. And once you got to 3-2 and it was 4-2, it was like, okay, it is what it is. But it did feel like they were at 2-2. Yeah, you did feel like we were the team on top. And it was like, we couldn't. There was like, there was a chance here to go grab it. But I think, to me, I think the whole game highlighted defensively how vulnerable we are still. And I think two things came out of that game that I was, I think first is whatever we can say about Vestergaard this season, which is in the sense that he's been very, very good for us. I think it did highlight the flaws that we see in, that we saw in Vestergaard previously. And to be honest, I think probably what Brendan Rodgers saw in Vestergaard as well. Like, he was, his lack of pace is going to kill you.
Yeah.
And that was time and time again, Chelsea just cut through us. Yeah. And it was pace and just the inability of our centre-halves to catch up. I think Faust as well has been having a shocker recently. Like, the past 5 or 6 games, he's really struggled.
For me, we're seeing the Faust of last season.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. Like,
for Belgium too.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
We watched that match yesterday with shit. Yeah.
And so I saw that. And then the other thing I think I'd say as well is that we really missed Ricardo that game. I think Choudhury again has done a great job for us, but ultimately, is the championship his ceiling? I probably think so. And I think at least for the first goal, the fact that he didn't even look behind him to see whether or not there was a Chelsea player there was just crazy to me. Like, you've got to be aware in any situation where their guys are. And if you look at the replay, he's just running towards his own goal and doesn't even look anywhere to see where anybody is. And I thought he was one of the players as well that got caught out, to be honest.
You're right, yeah.
So I think it did highlight to us that, again, we're going to have to find some money somewhere to strengthen this team, because if we do go up, there are definitely limitations to this side, I think, in the Premier League.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, we've shown it twice that we could do it with beating Bournemouth, which was an extra time, which you don't get in the Premier League, of course. And what would have been a decent draw at Chelsea, potentially. But yeah, I think you're right. We're a long way away from being able to be where we were, you know, 3 years ago, finishing fourth, fifth, and whatnot, where we, I mean, everyone's hoping to be, but I don't think we will be for a while now. But yeah.
Who was it in the away end as you were watching the game that you thought were, give me a high and low, like, who was the player that you thought was absolutely killing it, and then who was the guy that you were like, okay, this guy's struggling in this moment?
Dewsbury Hall, for me, I don't even need to think about it. Dewsbury Hall was absolutely just, it's like he was having fun on that pitch. He was phenomenal. We know his class anyway, but he was really, really showing it on Sunday. It's like he is where he belongs. And as for who struggled, Fast struggled a lot. Daka didn't find it easy, but I don't think he was getting much. For Vestergaard, I'm going to say, just purely for pace, you've got people like Nicholas Jackson and Raheem Sterling running at you, and they've got so much pace, and he got beat so many times.
Yeah, for me, Raheem Sterling was probably our best player on the
pitch. Oh my God, so man of the match for us, for sure.
Fucking amazing.
That free kick on its own was
we had 13 of us at the Blue Foot versus 3 Chelsea supporters.
Oh wow.
So
what, 5 a.m.?
Yeah, 5:45. And we had 13 of us there. So shout out to my San Diego Foxes. Love y'all so damn much, guys. That turnout was just insane.
Also, shout out Eddie and his brother driving down from...
There were Eddie shout outs coming later in the pod too
for sure.
Making the drive to see that match. Then he came down to see Ollie and went to the Wave match. So yeah, big shout out to Eddie, our LA Fox up there, who came down to see you. It was a hell of a morning at the Blue Foot. I know they got a good turnout in New York as well, but it's always fun when we have literally 3 times the amount of people that a giant Premier League club like Chelsea
has. Incredible.
So I guess yeah, Chelsea now that knocks us out of the FA Cup. There is one thing that we are focused on going forward, and that is getting promoted. And given the state of what we've seen this week with the news, guys, and we're suing people, we're being it's a nightmare, Chris.
Yeah, I think one of our friends, Graham, put it the best when he said, "I had no idea that lawyers had changed to Casey now that the Queen had died and we have King Charles," because that's one of the things that happens. But yeah, it's been a wild week off the field for us. I think we were notified. It's been in the news for a while that eventually at some point we would probably get charged by the Premier League for failing the PSL assessment, the profit and sustainability, which basically means that as a club, we're supposed to only have a loss of 105 million over 3 years. And it's very, very complex and was made even more complex because of COVID and the lack of revenue. So a lot of teams were able to say, okay, defer certain things, but ultimately it seems like we have broken the laws. We won't know until I think about 2 weeks' time when our accounts will be officially publicly published. So you'll be able to see that, and that will be kind of give us the top line number on how much we lost that season. But we're in a weird predicament because we got relegated. We're in this kind of, I like to think of it as no man's land, because you've got the Premier League who are after us, who are saying, okay, you broke the laws when you were part of the Premier League. And now you have the EFL who are also after us for it. But I think quite rightly we've said, well, the EFL have no jurisdiction on this because we've been not part of the Championship until this season. So what it's really given us is probably a free pass this year, which I think, again, how many times do we say this with Leicester? But we seem to, just like we did with administration back in 02, where all of a sudden they did the 15-point rule after we just decided to go into it randomly.
Loophole FC.
I think we are Loophole FC, buddy. And I think we have identified a loophole, and God bless the club, have found the way to do it. And so I think what it means in the short term for us this season is nothing. What it means next season is most likely we're going to start the season probably somewhere around -6, most likely dependent on what league we're in. Again, as I said on the pod 11 days ago, I think this team is better than 3 wins in the Premier League, so I'm not worried about that. So, you know what? Who cares? I think it does ask questions about the way the club's been run recently, and it asks questions, I think, philosophically and fundamentally about our ideology as a football club. But I think for the short term, for Leicester fans listening to this, I'd say don't panic. It is what it is. And ultimately, I think we just have to wait until August to kind of see what's going to happen.
Yeah. And again, I've said this multiple times on the pod, but this shit seems pretty dire right now, I'm sure, for those of you that might be a fan of 5, 10 years even. But this ain't shit compared to what we've been for. We'll get through this, guys. We will get through this. And you keep the head up, and that's all we can do. And the most important thing, whether you are someone that attends every single match like Ollie, or you're someone that goes to a bar and watches with your friends, or someone that sits on your couch at home and watches, the most important thing right now is to get behind the club, get behind Enzo and the boys, because frankly, that is all we can fucking do at this point.
Correct. Yeah. I know I'm speaking on my behalf and a lot of other Leicester fans half at the minute, that I won't ever stop supporting this club. No matter, you can give us a 50-point deduction for the next 10 years, I'll still be there every week, still be spending all my money and loving this club till we run out, or till the day I die, either or. That's the biggest thing, Matt. Just keep getting behind the club. That's all we can do, really.
I do wonder whether or not we can use this to our advantage over the next eight games. It does feel like it's going to go one way or the other. We're going to see it as either just a massive weight that comes onto our back, and given the results recently and the fact that now what leads the top of the league, we're second, whether that's going to be a detrimental thing, or are we going to use it as a way of the club to kind of rally around us and kind of be all in? So it's a really interesting kind of way of just seeing how the boys do kind of come together. It was, I think, the social media team and the posts that have come out over the weekend have tried to give you that sense that we're all in this together. Everybody's training. Everyone's looking kind of very excited, fresh for the run in. But it'll be interesting to see how kind of manifests on the field.
Well, if we're playing Arsenal or we're fucking playing ANSI Nomads, we'll
correct,
be there.
Yeah. Correct.
So you'll be sadly, you know, heading back on Wednesday. So Bristol City, you'll be there on Saturday.
Friday.
Yes, Friday, Monday. Right, it's the jumped. Good Friday, Easter Monday, double header.
Lovely.
Friday, 12:30, nearly 3 hours away. Cannot wait.
And the clocks still don't change for, right? So we'll.
No, the clocks change. Yeah, the clocks don't change. Yet,
yeah, so it'll be 5:30 kickoff.
Yes.
Here on the West Coast.
I think so.
Yeah, so it's a new one for me, Ashton Gate. I'm actually quite excited for that one. How I feel about the game. Truth be told, I've gone into the last few games not as adamant that we're going to win as I should be, and I'm always a bit. It's going to be a tough game. Every game that we play is going to be a tough game, but I think Bristol are a team like us that you just never know who's going to turn up because they spanked Southampton, but I think they've lost to teams right down below. So yeah, you just never know. But I'm excited about it for sure.
I think it'll be a tough game. I think none of these games are going to be easy on the run-in.
Correct.
I think we've struggled as much this season with look at the performances against QPR and those ones where you think, oh, you know what, this is going to be a no-brainer, and then all of a sudden we spend 75 minutes screaming and just trying to find a goal. So I don't think anything's going to be too easy this season. I think the other thing I would say, the confidence is, I don't believe that Leeds and Ipswich are going to go unbeaten through the rest of the season. No. I do think they will have upsets, and it's going to be about us taking advantage of those. For once, maybe having the early kickoff is a good thing. If you get the 3 points, you get yourself top of the league, all of a sudden everyone's looking back up at you. Does that encourage them to make mistakes? Who knows? But yeah, it's going to be, I mean, these places are not easy places to go. And I think the one team that might actually be the kind of decider in all of this is Southampton, because you look at Southampton, they've got to play ourselves, they've got to play Leeds on last game of the season, they've still got a fighting chance to make the top two, and so they've really got everything under their control. So if you can, I think they'll be one of the key deciders in this race to get us to that finish line. And
they've also still got Ipswich away.
And Ipswich away, yeah, they're playing all three, great points. So they have destiny, and I think they're going to take points off one of the three of us, as Leeds and Ipswich, and hopefully it'll be the other two and not us. But still, it's going to be tough in those for the run-in.
The bad news is, you know, we have blown that lead that we had, right? And we're in the championship. But the good news is the other teams chasing us are in the fucking championship as well. And this, I mean, you guys have seen it. It is a meat grinder of a league. So there will be fuck-ups. There will be slip-ups. There will be absolute crazy shit that happens that makes no sense, and it will come out where it does. So I think you know, Bristol, they're coming off a defeat. It'll be interesting to see if they are a team that comes at us because they are at home. Obviously Nige isn't there anymore, so they're playing a different style of football now entirely, so it'll be a much different match than the last time we played them,
for sure. Yeah, and it's been the case for most away games this season that we've been to, that because of who we are as a club and when we were top of the league, which obviously we're not anymore, it's been sort of their cup final. So their atmosphere has been better. They've been more up for it, and which is why we've lost games like Middlesbrough and games like that, because they've been more up for it than we are, because it's such a big game to them, and we take it for granted thinking it's not a massive game. You know, you're sat, I think they're sat 13th, 14th, and should be an easy win, but it really won't. Like you said, no game in the last 8 is going to be easy at all.
Well, Ndidi will be healthier. I mean, he should be back to damn.
And Ricardo should be fit as well. I think he's going to be huge. I think Ricardo is going to be the catalyst for the rest. I mean, he's been there, he's done it, but ultimately, he's probably the only player that can play that inverted fullback role Enzo wants to play him. And I don't think it's a consequence that our form has dropped since, like you said, Matt, him and Wilf have not been in the side. I think they've been our two players that you've seen.
Pivotal.
You've seen jumps significant. I think him and KDH, you said Ollie as well, is another player that's had a good season. But I think Wilf and Ricardo have been players that have just taken it to another level under Enzo, and we need them back in our side for this last run in. I think the biggest question to me, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, Ollie, is like, who'd you play up top? Because you've had a situation this season where we don't know who our best striker is. We've had Kelechi play, do a good job, get taken out of the side. You've had fits and starts with Vardy. I think he's very much a case where you need to play him in the moment. And if he's in the moment, you'll get the goals. If he's healthy, he was obviously out of the Chelsea game because of injury. And then you have Daka, who on paper you thought would be the guy this season. And he's had moments, but I think it really has highlighted what he is as a player at Leicester. He's a very much a up and down, give you highs, but give you a lot of lows as well. So who do you trust on the running for 8 games?
Yeah, it's a really, really good question, because if I was to have it my way, I would have played Tom Cannon for the majority of the season to give him a chance to make him, because he's been in this league. He was there with Preston. He knows how to play in this league. So I personally, I would have given him the chance for the last couple of months and let him gain his confidence, score some goals, and then we can trust him for the running. But I just don't think we can start him in this running, because it's such an important run of games now. So with him being
a lot to just fucking throw him in,
exactly. Right? Yeah, he wouldn't do. I know he wouldn't do well if he was thrown in. Then he'd get a lot of shit from the fans, which isn't fair. I mean, so for me, it'd be Vardy if he's fit for the last few games, because we know how much he loves the club, how hard he works. And do you know what? Against Hull and Sunderland, he looked like he was 25 again. He was insane. I must admit, he looked really sharp, tracking back and everything. So if he's fit, get Jamie Vardy in that starting 11, play as much as he can, and then bring either Daka or Iheanacho or Cannon on to either see the game out or to do what needs to be done.
It's crazy with me with Daka is, and he is just a perfect kind of symbol for this mysterious financial fucking bullshit that's gone on with this club. Because remember when we were all like, oh, I know, yeah, he's not going to play because if he plays one more match, we have to pay, what was it, $7 million?
Something like that.
Some crazy amount of money, you know, to his former club. And then all of a sudden, here he is coming on for the final minute against Sunderland at home after everyone said it's not going to happen. So what? It's just insane to me that we have not figured out what is going on with this money, and everything is shrouded in secrecy. No one knows fucking anything. Like, I don't even know if Enzo has any idea what's going on.
It makes you wonder, though, to your point about this, which is a great one, is what's going on with Kelechi? Because this is a guy that went to the African Cup of Nations, has come back from the African Cup of Nations, and hasn't even at times, he's made the bench a couple of times, but for a lot of the time, he's not even made the squad.
Right.
And it's like, what is going on behind the scenes? There was obviously things going on behind. And like last year of his contract, is it a case where they've said, hey, if you don't sign a new deal, we're not playing your type situation? I have no idea. Like, it does feel like there's a lot of distractions going on at the minute that we're not necessarily that aware of.
And you were calling out, we were at the Bluefoot, and Chris was like, FA Cup time, Nacho. Like, Nacho, FA thing. Cup, Chelsea, come on. Like, this. And so, it's just so fucking weird.
Yeah, I was screaming about 60 minutes in that Chelsea game that Ian, this is a game destined for Iheanacho. Daka wasn't cutting it. He wasn't getting the chances. I just think that Iheanacho would have... He could have, and I think he would have changed the game.
Fair play to Daka. I don't think there's ever, though, in that match, I don't know if there's ever been a player that has... He didn't score the goal, but, like, he scored that goal just by being the player that he is, by pressing as hard and as fast as he could, and he forced an error. So
we would not have gotten that goal.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, absolutely not. No other striker is running that defender down like that and forcing that dumbass play.
But because he didn't score and he might not have had a worldie of a game, there's still people that are giving him shit.
Yeah.
And I think it's really unfair because people don't actually they don't tend to watch the game. They just see, like, oh, Daka didn't score. He didn't get a high rating on my shitty app that I look at my scores on.
Right.
So I'm going to give him all the shit that I can give him.
Yeah. And I think he's a player especially that you have to watch live because he play like half the time he's not even on the fucking screen for us because he's pressing that line and you don't see the work that he puts in. Does he drive me absolutely fucking bat shit by missing these sitters? Oh my God, yes. But you can't say that the guy's not trying. And I mean, after what we witnessed last year with how many players that clearly didn't give a fuck, I've never once said that about Pats and Daka.
Yeah, we have a major issue at the top end of the pitch and we have a major issue at the bottom end of the pitch. And I understand where you're coming from with Daka. I think I can't question his effort, but what I can question is whether he's good enough for this team.
No, I agree.
And I think this season I expected him to have an incredible year. And maybe that is because Enzo didn't give him, and we didn't play him, like you said, Matt, for like the first 12 games or whatever it was of the season. And maybe that's part of it. But we didn't give him a long enough run. But in the performances that we've seen him this year, you look at the performances of the goals to minutes ratio of players like Vardy and stuff like that, it's his most productive season this year from a pure goals to minutes on the pitch ratio. And Daka is just not giving us that. And whether that's a consequence of the way that Enzo wants to play or whether it's just a consequence that he's not had that long enough run in the team to be able to do it, I don't know. But I think one of the things that I would like to see if we do go up is for us to think about, okay, let's evaluate what this season has been like and identify if those players who haven't performed in the championship, why do we think they're going to be able to perform at the next level and think about trying to get ways to get them out. But I mean, this is Leicester. It feels like the only way that we can get players out of this club is to actually give other clubs money to take our players because nobody wants to take our players with anything.
Let's be honest, dude. I think we might have a team of just players that we can get on a free because
when was the last time? I think Ric Flair made this comment on the Big Strong Leicester Boys podcast, which was a great one. When was the last time we ever bought a player on free? Like, it seems like we never take advantage of the free market, yet a lot of our players love to leave us on a free. It feels such a Leicester thing. It's like, we'll ignore everybody out there on a free, but we'll just let everybody go.
It's strange. I did want to say, you know, on Daka, you and I both, I remember our preseason pod because we saw what he did in the Conference League to these lower level European sides, right? Like, he scored 5 fucking goals. I don't think we're wrong to think that he was going to do something great. It's just, I don't know if it's the weird start or what happened, but yeah, I don't know. Weird.
Yeah, very. I think the potential's there. I don't know what it is that hasn't brought it out in him. You can't say it's lack of game time because he has had plenty. You can't say it's lack of confidence because he's scoring goals like this in the last. I think he had a spell of 5 games and 6 goal contributions or whatever. I just don't know what it is about him. It's really hard to put your finger.
All right, let's spin it then the other way. Let's go. Okay, so what player is outside of KDH, what player for us, I think Mads has been the player that we've been most excited about this season. That guy has come in. It's a little bit of an unknown, but he's come in and he's done everything that we could have wanted from a keeper. He's given us that Kasper Schmeichel moments of just how the hell do you save that?
Yeah.
But then when he has the ball at his feet, you're like, oh my God, like this guy could play center.
I honestly wish that we could have seen, I would love to be able to like have watched video. This is of course how big of a fucking nerd I am. I would love to have seen like the preseason footage of training and seen what, because when you look at the list of keepers that were just entrenched in this fuck, whether financially or whatever in this club, he had a lot of work to do coming from Bromby. And the fact that Enzo was like, yep, not you, Danny Ward, get the fuck out of here with your extra large shirt. Not you, Daniel Everson, with your feet that don't work. I want this kid right now. And the fact that he went straight to number one, it was incredible. I mean, especially you got Stolarczyk, who's been.
How the hell was Stolarczyk not number one last year when in Rodgers? Like, what did Rodgers not Ward see?
Was making so much fucking money. Like, for him to have played Stolarczyk over Gangly Danny, it would have been an embarrassment, you know, to John Rutkin, it would have been embarrassment to the development. Yeah. And so they had to where the money was. But I'm with you. Now we see this homegrown kid. It would have been absolutely incredible. But here we are, man.
I mean, I thought Stolarczyk,
the ghost of Brendan, remains.
Was great.
It was phenomenal.
Great on something. He's, dare I say it, like, look, we may have to sell players in the summer.
Yeah,
and if Mads is one of those, okay, sell a V, because
right.
I think you've got somebody there, Mr. Stolarczyk, that gives you just something that I didn't expect from him. Like, that's the point, and that's the most frustrating thing, I think, on the like you said, the ghost of Brendan, is that not only was it those players that he thought were the shining stars on top of the yep. tree, but it was also those players that he had no time of day for that turn out to be actually kind of solid team contribution players, and that's where the annoyance comes in. And Stolarczyk was great on Sunday, and just a like, yeah, I'm like, how the hell did that guy not even get a lick in during the Premier League? Because that's four or five goals. Like, I mean, and also at least, it's not only four or five goals, but it's also organization, mm-hmm. and it's also distribution. And it's also all of the things that Danny Ward was not very good
at. Danny Ward couldn't organize a fucking bonds market. Like, he couldn't organize a grocery store aisle. Like, it's just, he's the poster child for why we are where we are right now, that we're paying someone like that for another, by the way, another year.
Yep. Yeah. But back to Stolarczyk. I want to take it back to Burton Albion in the Carabao Cup this season, and I think he got a clean sheet there, and he was really impressive. But then you think, this is against a team in League One who don't usually do that well. But then from then he kept on getting picked, and I actually appreciated the fact that he got picked in a strong setup against Chelsea over Mads, because he's been the keeper in the whole run of the FA Cup and the Carabao Cup, and he's proved his point and he kept his place, which I really, really did appreciate, and he's shown why as well.
I would be shocked if he's not a national team keeper for Poland at some point. I don't know anything about Polish national team football, but he's young. He can organize a line. He's just been absolutely everything we need. So here we are with two great keepers, and I mean, we got seven on staff.
I have to ask Wally, you went to the Burton game. Mm-hmm. Did you stay around for the Bass charity bars presentation?
Oh, that's a great question.
No, right.
Ollie, you missed the lift trophy.
That trophy, that's in the cabinet, baby.
Oh no, that place is just, I think I got out there as soon as quick as being as close to Derby as we was, and as I just wanted to get back home. So no, I didn't, unfortunately.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sure there'll be many of opportunity for us to lift the Bass charity bars again and again and again.
I'm sure there will be that.
But I just love the fact that we have a trophy. We have a competition with Burton Albion for a trophy. It's brilliant, isn't it? Absolutely brilliant.
Looking at it, we are now at an hour into this podcast. So I think this is a great time to take a quick break, because as many of you know, Sandy, and for long, long, long OG listeners, you might remember when Chris and I used to do this, just the two of us. We would always go grab, you know, a six pack of some San Diego beer and proceed to just get shit faced while we talked about Leicester City, and then do a beer review. And that's kind of how this entire podcast started. Fast forward now, you know, years later, and we have the handsome Jason Becker and Jim Harris every episode, you know, for us. But it used to just be us two derelicts talking about this team in England while getting drunk. And we thought that this would be an awesome opportunity with you in town. to get some ideas on some San Diego beers and brew them back. So would you stick around with us? We'll take a quick break and then we'll come back. And we would love to get a proper Less Than Boys opinion on some San Diego beers. I know Chris is just fucking ready for this.
He's not stopped going on for the last couple of days. Let's do it.
All right. Okay. Hold tight, boys and girls.
See you then.
Forgive me for this.
All right. Welcome back to the US Foxes podcast, guys. We are back. And we are going to do a little San Diego beer taste test with Ollie. Now, the reason for this is, for those of you not familiar, San Diego is the craft beer capital of the United States. Over 250 breweries here in town. And I mean, some of these breweries have literally a single person, two people on staff, all the way up to some of the major ones like Ballast Point that have probably well over 500 employees. So we do beer in San Diego, y'all. And we would love to get the opinions of this young man who, you know, in England, give him an idea of what your norm, what's in the fridge right now on Shenton Close.
In the fridge, I'll have a crate of Maestrella, always Peroni in the fridge. There's very often Budweiser. I love a Spanish beer.
Yeah.
I love some Italian beers, but if you put Moretti near me, I'll probably punch you in the face.
Okay, so.
Oh, so you punch me in the face with beer Moretti. Well, I mean, okay, I'm going to step 6 yards back.
Not so a fan.
I think this one has come from, and I think those on the podcast are aware, our fellow podcaster, Mr. Jim Harris, when he went over to Leicester and met up with you guys, offered to buy you an IPA, I believe, at the KP. Yeah. And your response wasn't too good for it, was it?
What was the brand? Who makes it over there? Can you even remember? Or no, you were just trying to forget that moment?
I was that revolted. I just put the can in the bin.
You put the can in the bin. Okay. Yeah. Well,
so IPA, give Chris, IPAs in England, where do they rank on?
So I'm not a big fan. So I think they're getting better. I think they're not great, but I think they've got better over recent years. I mean, shout out to my local, the Pharmacy Arms, that was voted craft ale pub of the year in Leicester, I think, last year. Great place, great people. But I think when I came to San Diego, I did realize, to your point, Matt, how IPAs are a little bit different here. And so, Ollie, what we've got in front of you, and we'll post a picture on the Twitter page of the five beers that we picked for in case anyone ever sees them. But we have five what I would consider great San Diego IPAs. And so I hope you like one of them, buddy. I really, I'm highly doubting it based on the past couple of days. But yeah, you know what? I've got the confidence to say, you know what? One of these, maybe I could get a pint of this. So
we want full honesty.
Yeah.
This is an Englishman getting into San Diego breweries. Go ahead, Chris, take it away.
So, okay. So the first one, and you know what? You pick whichever one you want to pick, Ollie, whichever looks nicest to you, because we have a selection. We go from clear through to kind of more of a hazy kind of murky kind of way of looking at things. So where do your eyes go first?
I'm going here first.
Okay. So I can tell you this one is from the North Bay. So it's from a place called Carlsbad, a company called brewing called Burgeon, which are massive in San Diego. Really, really good beer. This one is called a Carlsbad Crush. So are you going to crush this, or are you going to kind of
this brewery through? Let's for the listeners, let's say this brewery, just so they have an idea, about 30 minutes from the Bluefoot.
Yeah, I'd say about 30 minutes.
So I'll pick this one based on I want to get it out of the way because it looks revolting, but I've just picked it up and smelt it, and I must admit it's got a nice fruity smell, but I don't associate beer with fruit, so
okay.
I'm not sure what to expect, right?
His mind, ladies and gentlemen, is just all over the shop right now. He's like,
I'm just gonna give it a guess. Let's go.
Yep.
What's that? Is that a smile?
I don't know. All important second sip.
Oh, okay. That's a win. He went back for seconds.
Yeah, do you know what? It'd be something I wouldn't ever choose, but I could drink a pint of it.
Okay, so the first one out of the gate.
There you go, this boys.
This is a bit anticlimactic, but all right.
I thought with the smell of that, because what I've learned is that a lot of them, they're all right once they go in, and then but there's an aftertaste. Mm. I thought that was going to be bad, but do you know what?
Okay, I'll have to admit, Ollie, I'm going to be honest with this. That choice was not mine. That was my beautiful partner Chrissy's choice. We were out last weekend at Burgin for a drink, and she went, you know what? You should get this for Ollie because I think Ollie will like it.
So knows.
When she listens to this, she is going to absolutely bully me. But yes, so my missus picked you a superstar one. So yeah, God bless her. Start. She got that right.
Very good start.
The other four were mine. So you might go, I might go away for 4 now. But yeah.
I might do that on purpose.
Hey, name the brewery again. Burgin Brewing, so Carlsbad.
This is Burgin Brewing up in Carlsbad, and it's called the Carlsbad Crush.
I can still taste it. Do you know what? I'll give that a decent score.
Okay, there we go.
Next, I'm going for Lux because I'm not impressed by that.
Okay, so that one is slightly more hazy than you'd say normally.
Which one is this, Chris?
So this is a San Diego staple, Ollie, you've got in your hand. That is Modern Times. So Modern Times, I think, is pretty much distributed now, I think, around all of the U.S.,
They're owned by Kona.
Yes. Very famous for their IPAs, like very a hoppy kind of, I think we reviewed them many a time on the podcast. Their fruit beers are really good.
Yeah.
As well,
I honestly disappointed in this company because when we first moved to San Diego, and I come from a wine background, so I enjoy my fruit beers. Like you don't associate it, but I kind of do. And when we moved here, Modern Times used to have like 5 different types of sours, and now they've literally got 1 sour and like 12 IPAs. So I'm really interested on this one.
So this one is brewed about a mile and a half from Matt's house.
Literally six minutes from right here.
I mean, I've done the smell test, and the look test isn't great. He doesn't get a good score for that. But
what would you call that? Would you think that was? If you knew it was, if you knew it wasn't beer, and you just saw that sitting on a countertop,
I'd assume someone's
dirty pond water,
cloudy pissed into it.
All right, so
smell test. It smells a little bit similar to the first one, just a little less strong. But let's go for the taste test.
The all important taste test. Okay, so we got a bit of a squint that time. We didn't get the smile. We got a squint. Yeah. Like
that's the aftertaste I'm talking about. That hit me about 2 seconds. I was about to say it's not that bad, but then the aftertaste.
Is it
hit
the
me.
Bitterness? What was it on the? Yeah, that bitter kind of pininess that you get on the aftertaste.
I'll go for the second sip on all of them just to be fair.
Bless you. His response for folks listening was not as smiley as the kind of first one. Which,
correct.
Yeah, initially.
But then there's now this second one.
Second sip is so important. It's not bad. It's not as good as the first one. Nowhere near as good as the first one. But that just the aftertaste is quite strange.
Okay, so far we have Burgin Brewing winning over
Modern Times. Okay,
I don't think I'd drink a full pint. I'd be able to drink a full pint after about.
What about like
an hour?
A sunny day in the garden. Would you be able to enjoy that, you know, with the pups running around in the yard?
I don't see why not.
Okay.
I don't see why not. Because
I will say this. The alcohol level in these things will fuck your day up compared to the other beers that you have usually in your fridge.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that. Yeah, God bless America. I think none of these IPAs are below about 6.5% for our UK listeners. Like, this is standard as well in the US.
It is.
Like, this isn't kind of crazy levels. Yeah. Like, we're dealing here with what you would normally get. I mean, all of these beers at one point or another have been on tap at the Bluefoot, and we've had. Mm-hmm. So,
it's also interesting to me, like, the fact that the craft brewers in San Diego, like, there's some 12% beers, 14%. Alcohol beers, and so they you can get cranked on this shit.
I will. That explains Chris's state on Friday night. Then,
oh, that was just pure.
What were you drinking on Friday?
You know, absinthe. What? Oh no, it wasn't. Well, we were watching March Madness because the basketball season's on, and so a few of the lads that we
a couple
meet
San Diego Foxes, shout out AJ, shout out Bill,
came out and we had a few beers. We go to one bar in PB called Open Bar, which is a nice beach dive bar. I go once a year.
Once a year.
And my Google phone even knows that I'm going. So I woke up the Friday morning and it went, are you heading to Open Bar today? And I was like, is that a good sign or is that a bad sign when Google actually predicts what I'm going to be doing? But yeah. So I had a few beers. Yeah, it was good fun.
Yeah, you were in one rare form. All right.
Rare form.
Next.
All right, next one. So we're 1-1 at this moment in time.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I'll say that. I don't hate it. These two look very similar. I'm going to save that to the last, I think. That one there. We're going to go right here. There's no...
Okay, straight in the middle. Okay, so we are going for this one. Okay, so this is a really interesting beer because, so as Matt said earlier, one of the biggest breweries in San Diego was a company called Ballast Point. A few lads out of that and out of other places came together. There was also a brewery called St. Archer, I believe, Matt.
Yeah.
And didn't they sell? And they those did. Guys became Harlan Brewing. Is that right?
Yeah. But what happens a lot of times is guys will start breweries in San Diego, like out of their garages. Okay. And they hit gold or they flunk. Right. And it's either really good. So we literally have had brewers like, Ballast Point sold for $1 billion with a B. Jeez. $1 billion. Christ. So what happens though is these companies will come in and they'll buy the company and then they'll put in the contract that the brewer that made the fucking beer famous and sold it, they can't do anything in the market for like a year. Right, so they have to wait a year before they can start these new companies. And then they start a new, more hipper, more, you know, everything is about like hipsterness. And then they'll start a new brewery with some farmer logo. And then they'll, you know, eventually sell that for $1 billion as well. Like it's silly. So, but yeah, that's
yeah, they would exactly what I always remember that because there was a Super Bowl where me and Matt invited me over and we were downstairs
in the courtyard.
The courtyard, and there was a Super Bowl commercial for St. Archer, and they filmed in OB, and they literally went by the liquor store that we always buy all this stuff from, which is amazing. And then we were like, "Oh, I wonder when that beer is going to come out." And then one of your friends is a brewer at St. Archer, and next thing you know, he's pulling out this beer out of his bag, going, "Go, boys, try this!"
Literally handed him out at the Super Bowl. So.
So anyway, long story short, this is Harlan. This is a really, really famous place as well in San Diego. Great, I think a really good selection of different beers.
Which one is this?
This is called the Rambler. So
this is my favorite of the
this
bunch.
Is their double dry hopped pale, which is a really good beer.
This shit's good. And I'm not a big IPA guy, and this one
they also have a really solid Japanese lager, which is really good on tap.
Really
good. But yeah.
All right. This one I'm really interested in.
I'm gonna have to get used to the fruity shit in beer, but from smell test, okay. I like it. I like the smell. The color's a bit... I'm not sure about the color. It's almost see-through with a tinge of yellow, but...
A see-through with a tinge... I like it.
Let's give it a go. Oh, again, the aftertaste is just... It's off-putting.
That little bit of bitterness, is that what it is? It's right.
I feel like the Rambler doesn't even have one compared to some IPAs that just last for hours. So
like a West Coast style IPA where you're notoriously going to get that bitter bite to it. You don't get in that one, I agree. But it's funny you should say that you've got that bitterness. When my mum drinks this, she thinks she's drinking a vase of flowers. So she will refuse. She every time we have IPA, she'll say to me, "Oh, Chris, you're drinking those flowers again," because my mum from the UK, God bless her, she only can picture flowers.
That's how I am with Hefeweizens. They taste like you're drinking the dirty water out of flowers. Shout out to Chris's mom in Seidston, because she is dead on about that.
I mean, I must admit, the second sip of the second one I had, there wasn't that aftertaste. So that's why I'm going to give it the benefit.
There is no, that's what, second sip. Yeah, let me get the second sip in there. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay, so we still have the Carlsberg, which is one.
Correct.
What's two, do you think? Okay, so we're going to...
Rambler?
We're going to go...
Third, wow.
And so, then the Rambler in the middle so far with two...
Rambler.
With two to go. So Modern Times at the moment is beating...
Everyone.
Yeah. So, okay. So
I was impressed.
Number four. Chris?
All right. So so these last two, I'm biased now. These last two are from my favorite brewery in San Diego.
Good to know. Okay.
So this place is called Culver. It's in the North County. We're really good friends with the guys that run it. Really nice people. They also have the best sandwich shop, I think, in San Diego. So you can get beer and sandwiches there.
Do not let him influence you because he says they're their friends.
They're also heavily... Their cans, I think, are wonderful. Their artwork is great. So these two are their two flagship IPAs. So this one is called Streetwalker, which has, I think, been on the menu since the beginning.
There are literally so many breweries in San Diego, you guys, that I have no idea who the fuck he's talking
about. That's fine. That's fine.
I've never heard of this brewery, which I love, but I can't give you any insight on this. So let's see what he thinks.
Smell test is not.
It's not as... interesting. Okay,
he doesn't like it.
Not a very good start.
Oh, no. Ollie,
what's it smell like?
It almost smells of nothingness with a tinge of... gone off fruit.
Ollie, nothingness with a tinge of gone off fruit.
Ollie, okay. You've gone from my missus's favorite person to all of a sudden my missus's... this is her. This
don't
is
influence her. Him. I want pure truth here.
Oh yeah, you'll get it.
Here we go.
Sorry, Christy. There's no aftertaste. There's no... after a couple of seconds, there's no taste.
Oh, there's...
Drinkable.
Okay. That works. That works.
All important.
I was going to say, the second taste has been key here, hasn't it? I think.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
The second taste has got you the first time.
Not. Oh, God.
Oh, no.
I'm not impressed. I'm not going to lie to you.
Oh,
I think that goes...
Is that fourth?
I think it goes fourth.
Okay, there you go.
Now, Chris, why do you think that is? What's the difference in that IPA?
So I think that is a lot more of a traditional San Diego-based IPA where you are going to get more piney bitterness than kind of the fruit forwardness that you'll get in the other stuff. And that's just based on the hops that they use. But when we think of San Diego IPAs, they're typically way more bitter than you would say of like other kind of styles of the IPA. So I think that's a good example of a San Diego IPA, but probably something that, as you say, it's not...
Yeah, a bit too bitter for my liking, that one.
Don't worry. If you live here long enough, you'll get used to it. Sure. So yeah, don't worry about it. All right. So number five, this one is the Outer Limits, which is probably my favorite of the IPAs they have.
It smells very similar to my favorite one. The number one.
So it's a bit more fruity. Yeah. So we'll see how you...
To me, this looks like a beer.
It actually is the first one that looks like a normal pint. Yeah.
That's why I've saved it to last. Without the head, granted, but it's got the beery look, and I know there's nothing to do with it. I like the glasses.
I'll say shout out to Matt and Ali as well for having enough little glasses that we can actually do this for because
here we go. Final one. Okay, there's an aftertaste, but it's a nice aftertaste, I think.
Oh, nice. That's the first time we've heard that word used.
I know. Not a shit aftertaste.
Oh, okay. So
moving along.
So we're moving. Okay, so we've moved we've moved Skywalker to the far end. So that is definitely number five. Oh, okay. And so we've also moved the Rumbler to number four. So... Okay, so Modern Times is three. So it's between the Carlsberg Crush and Outer Limits. There you go. So Carlsberg Crush beats it. That's not bad.
But the real question is... No, go ahead.
No, go on. Carry on.
I'm just curious. The real question of all those beers, if you had five ice cold sitting in front of you or you had a Budweiser to the left, what are you picking?
I think if it's these three, four.
Okay.
Oh, I'd pick them over the Budweiser.
All right, that's what.
There you go.
There we go, boy.
But yeah, if you're talking about a bottle of Estrella or Peroni,
that's why I said Budweiser.
Here he comes, Mr. European. Now.
But it'd be close. That, because I was impressed with that one. It'd be close. I must admit. Brilliant. So I'll say this, Chris. I didn't hate any of them.
Well, that's a good sign.
Didn't hate any of them.
Congratulations to my missus who picked the Bimble one.
Yes, thank you, Chrissy. It's like knowing me well.
I'm not going to live that down for the next 6 months for sure.
Oh man, this was fun, guys. We've been waiting to do this for so long, Ollie. So thank you for joining us, brother. Like having you here live and visiting, it's just been incredible to get a chance to see the Bluefoot and where we do our thing for the San Diego Foxes. And, you know, I also love like you getting to, you know, meet and tell your stories to some of our, you know, Americans that haven't been and know that. Yeah. It's awesome.
I've had a chance to meet some of the nicest people that I've met in a long, long time. So I can only thank you, Matt. I can only thank you all that have been so welcoming. It's part of the reason I love this place so much. I've just felt so at home from the minute I've been here, really. So yeah, thanks so much.
Absolutely, man. Well, we love you, and safe travels home, and we know you'll be singing loud and proud at Bristol City, and you'll be sending us an amazing report back.
Correct.
That we can play for all of your I'm sure now new fans that are getting to hear, because bro, you're a natural at this. Like, if it weren't for the fucking time difference, we're gonna have to figure out a way that we can just.
I mean, a lot of people know that I'd be probably pretty good at talking shit for a living, so that might be why I'm a natural.
Perfect. Chris, any final words to send our
no,
folks
I'm
off?
Just a happy lad. I'm a happy lad.
It's perfect.
We've changed the dynamic. Gone of the days of saying. Only the K. I'll just say I'll have to do a review of the KPIPA, and I'm gonna guess I'm gonna agree with you, mate.
And it was nothing like.
I hope so. The taste of that one, it instantly hit you with just I want to say pumpkin. I want to say that was the taste.
Pumpkin.
I want to say pumpkin was the actual taste on the can, God. The sort of flavor of it. But it was just awful.
Well, no wonder you fucking hated it. Jesus Christ! I mean, all right, well. Guys, Bristol City's up next. The club is where it is. Shit's crazy, but like we said earlier, there's nothing we can do about it besides cheer for the boys and give them our support. Want to say thank you to Ollie for joining us for the first time live. It will be happening again. We're going to make it happen. But yeah, thank you to all of you for joining us at always on the US Foxes podcast. Wherever you are in the world, it's what, Good Friday, 5:30 West Coast, so 8:30 East Coast. Do your part, get together. We won't have a match too early on the West Coast for us to get together, but I'm sure the New York Foxes will be getting something going on the East Coast, Rochester Foxes, Philly Foxes, etc. Check in with your local chapter to see if you can watch the game. Otherwise, yeah, guys, we'll see you next time on the US Foxes podcast, back with Jim and Jason. They will be, you know, back in their normal roles, and we'll be off this international break. But this was fun. Fucking love it. So thank you, as always, for joining us. Last words, Ollie, for the fans.
Thank you all so much. All the love I've been getting on Twitter and everything else. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Hell yeah, brother. All right, guys. We'll see you next week on the US Foxes podcast.
Of the city.
Of that city.